Locked On Heat is an intelligent and entertaining daily podcast covering the Miami Heat and the NBA. Like I said, it's daily, five times a week. So subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play, because we'll be there every morning, waiting for you. You can email the show at lockedonheat@gmail.com, or you can send us questions for our weekly mailbag, inquire about advertising, or just say hi. And finally, we're asking you, the listener, to go on iTunes and leave us a rating, and even a review if you're feeling particularly generous. It helps. Now, on to the show. Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm an editor at allyoucanheat.com. With me, as always, on the other line, NBA writer at large, a man of many bylines, including over at Today's Fast Break, it's David Ramil.
How you doing, Wes? You sound pretty pumped up, man.
I'm good, because I went to Costco this weekend, and as you know, you and I have talked about this pretty often, I'm a beer drinker, as you are. And they had Lagunitas IPA, $24 for a 24-pack. So
that's a good bargain.
It's a dollar a beer. I'm just sitting here vibing, ready to do a mailbag with my buddy over here. We're gonna talk Heat. I'm gonna drink some beer, and I think we got some really good questions to discuss.
Absolutely, yeah. It's been it's a slow time, but people are still curious about the Heat. So first and foremost, to all of our listeners who chimed in, we really do appreciate all your questions. So keep them coming. We'll be answering these throughout the whole summer and off season. So we want to hear from you, whether it's a question or just any kind of feedback you have on the show whatsoever. So we really appreciate it.
Yeah, fan art involving us and Dion Waiters hanging out on an island. Anything you got, just send it this way. LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. Well, we got some topics, including what shooting guards are going to make the roster now that the Heat have a gluttony of shooting guards. Was matching Tyler Johnson's offer from the Brooklyn Nets a mistake for the Heat, given that Dion Waiters became available a little bit later? And can Beno Udrih make a return to South Beach? But first, we're going to start with Steph Curry, who is a free agent after this upcoming season. And one of our questions from
Tony Carruthers.
Carruthers, yep, was, hey, Curry, Heat, is that a possibility?
Well, I mean, I'm sure it's certainly an option for Pat Riley. I'm sure he would love to explore it. I don't think that anything's off the table. We've seen that before from Riley. He certainly wants, you know, to always be at least open to landing a whale if possible, and I think there won't be a bigger one than Steph Curry next summer, just it was with Kevin Durant this summer. Whoever the biggest name is available in free agency, I think Pat Riley will always be interested in. And I think that certainly Steph Curry he'll be on Miami's radar. I think that's the best way of putting it. So whether or not it's a realistic option, that's a whole other discussion.
I mean, estimates of the max salary, now I'm not necessarily a cap expert, but it's in the range of like $200 million, right?
Sure.
So wow, right? That's a big contract. If the Heat were, I don't know, the Heat might be able to get into the room with Curry. If Curry doesn't re-sign with the Warriors immediately, which people just wondering, like, why in the hell would Curry leave the Thunder or the Warriors in the first place, is because they just
Curry and slip there, huh?
Yeah, right. Curry to the Thunder? What? No. because they got Durant, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green.
Sure.
You know, if Durant takes the Warriors under his wing and makes it his team, and Draymond Green Snapchats his dick a few more times, Curry might just be like, you know what? I'm out of here. Like, I'm not appreciated here. And go, quote-unquote, home, which is the new thing that people like to do, I guess, to North Carolina and play for the Hornets or something. He's a free agent. Anything's possible, as we learned with Dwayne Wade, with Kevin Durant, with LeBron James. I mean, anything is possible when you're a free agent. He hasn't signed an extension. He's not going to until next season if he's going to re-sign with the Warriors. So we've got to talk about it. So rather than talking about if it will happen, maybe talk about how it can happen and what that team would look like. I mean, you would assume that Goran Dragic has to be traded in order for that to happen. You would assume that Chris Bosh is no longer with the organization, probably not in the NBA for that to happen. So let's say hypothetically, right, that Bosh for some reason can't play, and this offseason comes up, his cap is cleared off the books due to a medical retirement kind of loophole in the CBA. Goran Dragic is traded to make room for Curry, who is already committed to the Heat. Now, the Heat are looking at a team with Steph Curry, Josh Richardson, Justice Winslow, and Hassan Whiteside as the core, probably, right?
Yeah.
And Dion Waiters, of course.
Of course. Who would obviously, you know, pick up his player option so he could play a second year, so he could, you know, keep Curry in check during practices.
Of course, right. That's an interesting situation, but I don't know if that's necessarily the best draw for Curry, other than if he's like hype that he's written off the Warriors. Like, I'm leaving the Warriors. I've done everything I can. And
that's impossible, though. You can't just say that, right? I mean, that's the whole thing. I mean,
right,
I know
so.
For the sake of discussion, it's always interesting to say, well, what if he writes off the Warriors? But why in God's name would he possibly write off the best team in NBA history?
So the Warriors, right, who are projected to win like 83 games or something.
That's
this
right.
Season.
Yeah, one more than they can actually feasibly play during the course of the season. They're going to win them all in an extra one. They're just going to give us a win somewhere.
Well,
along
the All-Star game is basically going to be the Warriors starting five.
That's a good
right?
point.
So you just
does that count
give
as a win?
Credit for the All-Star
yes.
game.
Okay.
So you got maybe the Warriors. Who else? Boston's all right. You got always talk about.
It has to be so disastrous that like my feeling is that, and we've seen this. They've incorporated smaller role players and have been able to handle Draymond Green's ascendancy, Klay Thompson's becoming a star. I mean, all these different players, even Steph Curry. Look, he wasn't a star when he was first drafted. He went through his myriad. You know, ankle injuries and things of that sort, where people thought he might be a bust, if nothing else. Nobody knew how high his ceiling was going to be. Nobody projected him to be a star-shattering three-point shooter amongst the best ever to play the NBA. So, you know, you can't assume that he's just all of a sudden going to, you know, lose favor with the team or all. I mean, I think that the chemistry issues can't possibly be that bad. And they, and, you know, I have faith in Steve Kerr being able to massage and manage these personalities the way he has for the past 2 years in a way that Mark Jackson couldn't.
It can only possibly be a vanity thing. And, like, this is me reaching. This is not me saying it's going to
happen. Sure, no, obviously.
Possible, but it can only be a vanity thing. It can only be, I mean, that he was the face of not only the Warriors, but because he was the face of the best team in the NBA that just won 73 games, he was the face of the NBA for the better part of two seasons. And now all of a sudden Durant comes, and by, you know, on many factors, Durant is a better basketball player than Curry. You know, he might mm-hmm. come in and be the more dominating player and take over the Warriors. Maybe Curry's like, no, I wanted to be the face of a franchise. I want to take 12 three-pointers a game and not feel like I have to give the ball up. I mean, you could argue that that's a possibility. I don't know how, like, what if he does go to the Thunder and he decides, you know, I don't even want to play point guard anymore. I'll let Russell Westbrook be the point guard and I'll play shooting guard next to him and create, like, the most dynamic backcourt of all time.
It's an interesting possibility. Yeah, no, I mean, look,
I mean,
that's a lot of...
right? There's no way that happens, but...
It's also theoretically and so, you know, completely unlikely. I mean, if the question is whether or not Miami would even consider Steph Curry, absolutely is the case. I mean, that is absolutely the case. Whether or not it's realistic...
The room with
I'm sorry?
They're going to at least try to get into the room with him.
Oh,
but
of course.
More than likely what probably happens is that Curry puts some BS thing out on the Players Tribune where he's wearing something ridiculous and says something dumb they didn't even write and just says, I'm re-signing with the Warriors. Where else could I possibly go? Even though it's like nobody wanted to read that. Nobody cares.
Sure.
We knew that you were signing there in the first place. But
right. Maybe the question then becomes whether or not Miami is an attractive option. And I mean, I think the way you laid it out with the who will be on the roster with the loss of Bosch, I don't think it's necessarily that big a draw. Unless he's somehow interested in rebuilding because he's already achieved everything he has. Let's say they do win 83 games somehow and they do win another championship. And at that point, he's like, you know what? I've already got two rings. I already was in a third finals. I've won two MVPs already, possibly a third this season. Maybe I don't need to do anything else. Maybe I can just go lead a team back into contention. And, you know, maybe Miami is that attractive an option to him and Ayesha Curry. That doesn't seem likely. But
what about somebody else like a Blake Griffin or... I mean, Chris Paul has a player option next year, but, I mean, the banana boat reunion is not happening in Miami. That basically ended when Dwayne Wade signed in Chicago. Other guys, Gordon Hayward has a player option. Kyle Lowry has a player option. Paul Millsap has a player option. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are some guys that are going to be available. Serge Ibaka is an unrestricted free agent. I don't know. I think that as long as the Heat are in South Beach and they have Pat Riley and Eric Spoelstra and that culture's in place and they have ambassadors like Udonis Haslem and even, you know, maybe Chris Bosh if the situation works out for the better and you know, guys around the league that want to come to Miami. I mean, Dion Waiters, he wasn't a big name necessarily or like a star sure. necessarily, but for him to basically say, I'm giving up money so that I could be with a stable organization and a good situation for like the first time in my career, that speaks volumes given, you know, the perception of the Heat in the league. So I think they are a destination. And I mean, as much as a destination as a lot of other teams are, I mean, the Warriors can't really sign many more all-stars. So where else are these guys going to go? You know what I mean?
That's a good point. You know, I'm looking at this list of free agents or potential free agents for next season. And one name popped up at me, and now that I'm looking at it, it makes a whole hell of a lot of sense. What about restricted free agent now out of Oklahoma City, Victor Oladipo? Bring him to the franchise to help mold him along the same career path as Dwayne Wade. Like, he's been compared so often to Dwayne Wade in his limited NBA career, even collegiately, because he played for the same coach while he was at Indiana that Dwayne played for in Marquette. And now all of a sudden he comes here back to Miami, Spoelstra mentors him and guides him along the same process that he did with Dwayne Wade, and he's able to achieve and unlock his potential here.
Are you an Oladipo fan?
No, I'm not, actually.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I used to be, and now, after last season, I'm not sure if he's ever going to have. I mean, the idea of that sounds great, but sure. Also the idea of Oladipo and Justice Winslow on the court together could be disastrous. I mean, the defense would be great, right? But
right.
They would just kill the spacing.
Well, yeah, I mean, there is that. Look, I like Oladipo as a person. I've talked to him before. I've seen him a few times. I mean, he's a good guy, very cheerful, whatever, honest, open, and, you know, a solid person off the court. Not a bad player on it, but just the shooting is such an issue. And not, I mean, a lot of people in Oklahoma City were very – let's see what the right word is. They felt that Orlando got fleeced on the deal, but having seen his limitations up close, I didn't feel as strongly about it as a lot of Thunder fans did. And I don't think he's necessarily the haul that everybody expected, you know, to be in sure. Oklahoma City.
Unless he can improve that shot, right?
Right, which is a big thought. And look, and I've seen some numbers that show that he's a good corner shooter. He improved towards the second half of the season. We've seen that before from Depot, and I'm not convinced until he's able to do it for 82 games. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. I like the symmetry of filling the gap that Dwayne Wade leaves by going to Chicago. And then for Wade to come back in a couple of years after his tenure in Chicago ends and kind of work alongside a good friend and continue to mentor Oladipo. I mean,
Mentoring Jimmy Butler, he comes back and mentors Oladipo, and that's his impact on the league, his lasting impact.
It's poetic. It's beautiful. I love it.
All right. Well, just to circle back, the Heat will be in the mix for some free agents. I mean, that's just the way that Riley's built this roster. There's a bunch of one-year contracts on here. Whether sure. or not Curry starts taking meetings, if he does, you got to think that the Heat are at least one of the meetings that he takes. And, I mean, that hasn't worked for the last couple of several free agents since basically LeBron James. But, hey, it's something, right? You're in the door. All right, moving on. Several people have asked this question, actually, in the mailbag. So thank you, everybody. But I guess everybody's wondering. The Heat have got so many guards. Which of these guys make the team? Now, this was already a question before the Heat signed Dion Waiters. They signed Dion Waiters, and now they've got a gluttony of guards, specifically the shooting guard spot. Which one of these guys make the team? Now, right now, we've got Josh Richardson, Tyler Johnson, Dion Waiters, Wayne Ellington, Magruder, Weber. Am I missing anybody? I don't think I am.
I don't think so either.
No, that was basically everybody. Goran Dragic, of course, but he's making the team.
He's a possibility, right? I think he's a strong lock to make it.
So which of these guys make the team? I mean, you basically have room for three guys at each position. If you're gonna evenly distribute your 15 players across the five positions, the Heat have enough room to carry three guys at each position. Now, right. The reason we lump all these guys in, the questions that we got were really about shooting guard, but we got guys like Briante Weber and Tyler Johnson in there who play a lot of point guard, but, you know...
And Josh Richardson and Deion.
Yeah, that's true. All these guys are kind of interchangeable, right? Especially with Wade leaving, it's like, all right, first of all, they got to decide who's the starter, and that's basically between Josh Richardson, Tyler Johnson, and Deion Waiters. And then after that, who starts missing the cut?
Right.
You know, guys like Magruder, unproven. They were good in the D League for the Skyforce last season. You got to think that he's near the end of that list.
My feeling, you know, and I think it's punctuated by the addition of Waiters, from Pat Riley's perspective, from the team's perspective, if you can get guys on the cheap that are proven players, that are capable of playing multiple positions, that can do a number of things, that don't impact a team's versatility negatively, why not add them? So while it seems like a glut at a particular position, I think the way that we're seeing the league continue to evolve is that as long as guys can show that versatility, there'll be a place for them. And all these guys can guard positions 1 through 3 at the very least, and we've seen that. We've seen Josh Richardson play some point guard. We've seen him bring the ball up. We saw that in you know, summer league particularly, where they were actively trying to develop that. Mm-hmm. And we've seen him play a little bit of small forward. He can guard guys at 6'6" that maybe other point guards and shooting guards might not be able to as comfortably. So I think we've seen a lot of versatility from these guys. Look, we talked about this in our last podcast about Deion Waiters. During the playoffs, he was able to guard a guy like Draymond Green and limit him because of his bulk, because of his strength, and because of his tenacity, because he was more willing to defend a player that was clearly taller and heavier than he was, and he was able to do a good job with him. Not necessarily, you know, for 48 minutes a game, but, you know, for occasions here and there throughout the course of a game, Waiters can be counted on to guard a number of players. So I think as long as you have all these guys that can do a number of things, it doesn't hurt the team in any way to have them on the roster. And while it does look like you're amassing all these two guards, well, you want to get the most talented players. The way that a lot of people look at the draft is picking the best option available. You know, you got to do the same thing when it comes to free agency at time. You want to be able to bring those guys because you never know what can happen. And so the question to me then becomes, is this a situation like it was a couple of seasons ago, where maybe you make the mistake of bringing in a guard or somebody along those lines and ignoring, or actually it happened last season, didn't it? When you added Darrell Wright.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you avoid bringing a guy like Jarnell Stokes or maybe even somebody else who could fill the gap a little bit and add some rebounding and height to a smallish lineup. And, you know, that's the question. But for now, I guess when you bring in all these guards, you're probably assuming from Riley's perspective that Bosch is going to be available, that he's going to start. And if that's the case, then you can go ahead and add all these other players that are a little bit smaller, but still capable of playing multiple positions.
And of course, there's the vaunted task of trying to replace Dwayne Wade, right? So I think if you're looking at this on a spreadsheet like I am now, and kind of just seeing where these guys kind of fit and line up, Goran Dragic, Tyler Johnson, Briante Weber, Josh Richardson, Deion Waiters, Wayne Ellington seem like the favorites, right? If we were creating Vegas odds and placing bets, those are probably the favorites. And then Rodney Magruder probably falls by the wayside and maybe gets assigned to the D-League team, right, for another season.
But
Weber, I think, you know, you look at Weber, he's small, he's had injury issues in the past, but the Heat liked what they saw from him last year in the D-League. They're somewhat committed, not committed, but somewhat almost, like, they're interested in him enough. They're intrigued by Briante enough that they signed him for the playoffs last year and they gave him a 2-year deal. I think he probably edges out Magruder, and not to mention, of all these guys, he's probably the only pure point guard out of the group, which right. may or may not have value, we'll see. But let me at least make an argument for Magruder over Wayne Ellington. I mean,
okay.
Wayne Ellington, when the Heat signed Waiters, Wayne Ellington went from basically the de facto second shooting guard to a guy that's going to be fighting for playing time in a Gerald Green sort of way. And if you have a guy like that at the end of the bench, certainly that is valuable. He's a veteran. He knows how to shoot. He can take the court and make a three-pointer when called upon, right? But now his role is, like, what's the difference between that and a Luke Babbitt, for example, right? Because Luke Babbitt, when he was traded for, he was basically known to be regulated to the end of the bench, going to play a James Jones type role probably where he comes in with the Heat, need a couple of three-pointers, and that'll probably be his role on the team.
But okay.
If you have a guy like Rodney Magruder, who was promising in Summer League, was a key part of the Skyforce team that won the D-League championship, for whatever that's worth, and in Summer League, he shot 43.8% in Orlando and 55% in Las Vegas from three-point range. So he can hit the three-pointer. And he's young. He's good size, 6'5". He's listed, 6'5", about 200 pounds. He's only 25 compared to Ellington, who's a little bit older. And he has more potential defensively. If this is a dude that's riding the end of the bench regardless, we're talking about a guy that might average 5-6 minutes a game, you know? And realistically probably play less than that per game on a regular basis. Why not bring in Rodney Magruder and let Ellington go? Because the only reason you signed Ellington was because you were trying to basically, and we'll get to this in a minute, but basically sign a bunch of contracts and fill out your roster before you had to go match Tyler Johnson, right? Because the deadline was coming up. You can now let Ellington go, keep a promising prospect in Magruder, and not risk him getting scooped up by another team a la Willie Reed last season.
That all makes sense, and I agree 100%, but I think that's just not in the way that Miami does things, because I think you've seen in the past that they would rather get these guys that have some potential and some ability and have them kind of continue to work on their game a little bit in Sioux Falls, and then if there's a need that arises over the course of the season due to injury or a trade or something along those lines, then bring them along and have them kind of tested in that sense, you know, after they've already gotten a little bit more experience.
Well, that was my argument for Magruder. I think
it's a good one, and I agree.
But also, we argued in favor of Dion Waiters, and look what happened. So, Pat Riley, I know you're listening to this. You've proven it time and time again that you listen to this podcast. Magruder's the way to go. All right.
Do you think given Ellington's experience and you know, ability to hit the three-pointer more regularly, having gotten a lot of, you know, NBA playing time over a guy like Magruder, who hasn't any, you know, don't you think that he's probably the better option at this point?
Option right now. Like, if you're going to tell, okay, the Heat, that you've got 10 games you got to go out and play, and you've got to win those 10 games, I take Ellington over Magruder. But in the
long developmentally, term, you look at, okay.
Yeah, we got to look at the long term here. The Heat might make the playoffs this season with Ellington or Magruder. Ultimately, we're talking about maybe the 15th man in the roster. It's not going to make all that much of a difference. And my argument there is, while Ellington's the better NBA player right now, and I don't even think that's a question, I think by game 80 of this season, Magruder could be a better player than Ellington is right now. I mean, just given potential. I mean, given what the Heat have dug up lately with guys like Tyler Johnson, who knows?
Right. Anyway, excellent segue, by the way.
Yeah, there we go. Tyler Johnson, Brooklyn. The Heat dug him up. And Brooklyn tried to offer him $50 million over 4 years, and then Tyler Johnson threw up, and then the Heat matched the offer. So, was that a mistake? And we talked about this originally when Brooklyn offered him, we talked about it. When the Heat matched it, we talked about it again. And now we're going to talk about it a third time because Dion Waiters became available, and now, by signing Waiters, with Josh Richardson and Waiters, the Heat could be, you know, they're in a good enough position at shooting guard where maybe they didn't have to match Tyler Johnson's $50 million offer sheet. Looking back in hindsight, which is always 20/20, was that a mistake for the Heat to do?
It's so hard to say given the addition of Waiters, I mean, and what we just argued a second ago about, you know, constantly trying to add as much talent as you possibly can. My issue is, you know, we heard some comments from Pat Riley in his most recent press conference about Mickey Arison refusing to lose one of his guys. I think that was actually how he phrased it. And that all sounded so bizarre, right? Because you rarely think of Arison getting on the horn to Riley and telling him, no way, we're not losing Tyler Johnson to Brooklyn. No way in hell has that happened on my watch. Match it. I don't care about money. $50 million, that's a great deal for a guy like Tyler. We want him here with the Heat for the next 4 years. Do it no matter what.
Do you think there's a guy that Mick Arison is reminded of when he watches Tyler Johnson that maybe he loved in Miami that maybe either retired or got away or something? Like,
I think the whole thing is BS. I'll be honest with you. I mean, yeah, I don't know why Riley. Yeah, I don't know why Riley would make that story up like that. But whatever. I mean, like, I wonder if how much he has to call.
It's the same story as he paddled across the Mediterranean, got the phone call on his Motorola Razor. It was Mickey Arison.
Good one. No, I mean, you wonder if he has to call Arison beforehand and say, hey, listen, I'm going to kind of throw you under the bus about the whole Tyler Johnson thing. Be cool with it. Stay off Twitter for a couple of days and we'll see what happens.
Or if he was like, I'm about to give this dude that played like 13 games in the NBA $50 million over 4 years. Are we cool if I do that?
Sure. I'm a billionaire. What do I care?
Right, you know? And then that turns into he wouldn't let me not let match him or whatever. But
I don't know. It's hard to say.
It was a mistake because I agree with you. I think the Heat where they're at now, I think you just accumulate as many assets as possible. And I wrote this at the time that they had to match Tyler Johnson. I wrote this for today's Fast Break, by the way. You should go over there and visit that website. Great writing. That when you're in a position that the Heat are where you don't have a lot of future draft picks because you just traded, you know, two of them for Goran Dragic, Dwayne Wade just left. Chris Bosh's situation isn't meh. You need to keep, and you basically stumble on guys like Tyler Johnson, Hassan Whiteside, and Josh Richardson, who you got for basically nothing, and who carry substantially more value than what it took to get them onto the team in the first place. Those are big assets, and if you're the Heat, you can't afford to let those assets get away for nothing. Yes, you're paying him an average of $12.5 million per season. But at the same time, you can always trade that contract. You can always, they can't trade him this season. They'd have to wait till next season due to the rules, I believe. But,
right.
You know, he's a young guy who the Brooklyn Nets thought that they could maybe steal from the Heat and could possibly potentially turn into a starting caliber shooting guard and maybe a player that you not build around but build with. And that's got value. And given how many of these contracts in are being tossed around right now this offseason, it's only going to be that much and more next offseason. Tyler Johnson's contract of $12 million could look like a bargain in year two and three of that contract. I don't know, man. I think it was right to risk it.
I don't know that he has a $20 million ceiling, though, if you're looking at what he'll make in years three and four. I mean, I know you're talking 12 based on the average per year, but, I mean, you're looking at the numbers in three and four, but so much of that can change. Who knows what's going to happen in 3 or 4 years? I mean, I'd say for now, it's probably the better deal. And if you're looking at the addition of Waiters as a reason why you don't add Tyler Johnson, well, first of all, you didn't know that Waiters is going to be available. And then secondly, remember that he's using this 1 year. He's got a 2-year deal, but he's got a player option for next. He's using this 1 year to showcase his skills in the hope of signing a more lucrative deal elsewhere. He's basically a 1-year rental for Miami. At a best case scenario, I don't see him sticking with the team next season unless he plays really poorly. I mean, either he gets hurt or somehow.
You don't think if he plays well, that the Heat would re-sign him?
I don't think that they'll have the money for it unless Bosch retires, and not
unless
if you've already got Tyler Johnson.
Unless he blossoms into that potential of the number four pick, and then he's the all-star that they land next year.
But how is that going to be possible given the fact that he's likely a sixth man at best who's going to be competing for minutes with a glut of other players? I don't see them, you know, the problem is that we're wondering whether or not there's going to be this kind of chemistry between this overstuffed backcourt with a lot of guys who are duplicative as far as their overall abilities are concerned. Not a single one of them stands out in any way, shape, or form. But they can do a lot of little things well. At least Richardson can, Tyler Johnson can. They can all shoot a little bit. They can all defend a little bit. They're not great necessarily, or at least we don't know. Maybe there's going to be a ceiling for Josh Richardson. He's got, I think, the most potential of everybody at the backcourt other than Dragic.
Yeah, that's a good point you make. I mean, all those guys are basically Ellington, Weber, Waiters. I mean, they're all signed to one-year deals. You at least have Tyler Johnson for the long term, and he's not even thinking about the money right now, he's going to get better than what he's at right now, right? Like you would figure. I mean, what did Matthew Dellavedova just sign for with the Bucks? I mean, it was like $10 million.
A lot. Yeah. I mean, I think it was 40. I want to say it was 4 years, 46 or something like that.
A little bit more. So, I mean, if Tyler Johnson's gonna be Matthew Dellavedova, he can make a really good living for himself. And apparently, guys like that in this new world and this new salary cap, as it stands now, at least, they're worth that much amount of money. So, All right, moving on to another white guard, Beno Udrih. We got asked by,
Patrick Phillip is the name of the person who asked the question.
Patrick Phillip, and then the question from Tyler Johnson was from Aherds. He wouldn't give me his full name, so Aherds it is. But thanks for the question anyway, Aherds. But Patrick Phillip asks, do you think the Heat front office will sign Beno to a partially guaranteed contract, enough to cover what he left on the table last season, and then release him prior to the start of the season, which will allow the Heat to retain Weber, Magruder, Jankovic, etc.? It's an interesting question, and basically what it comes down to is, would the Heat at least show enough good faith to Beno, saying, like, look, we cut you before the playoffs last year so that we can make some roster moves, or before the All-Star break, sorry, so that we can make a roster move and get Joe Johnson. We appreciate that. Here's the money you left on the table. We're going to cut you, though, because we're looking to go in a more youth-centered direction this season. It's an interesting question, but I'd like to pose that to you, David. But I'd also like to say, if the Heat, and the report is that the Heat have a standing offer to Beno, by the way, and that he's looking elsewhere, and if he can't get a better deal from another NBA team, that he's just going to sign with the Heat and try to compete for a roster spot. If he does that, can he beat out this gluttony of guards that we've been talking about?
I think so. I think, I mean, you see that kind of talent, explosiveness, and whatever other potential, whatever names you want to use to fill in for, you know, potential athleticism from these younger players. And as much as you'd like that to develop, I think, again, you're going to see that stash in the D-League so they continue to gain experience that Beno already has. So you wonder how much his injury is going to slow him down. He was already towards the tail end of his career. I'd say he's played for a number of teams. He's, you know, he fits the journeyman type, but he's been solid everywhere he goes. Even as he came on in Miami, he showed some promise there.
Yeah,
he had some really good moments. Yeah, absolutely. I think he was solid in spots. I think you know what you're getting from him. And I think that's just the cultural makeup of Miami, is they'd always what they know. The devil you know, or the potential of failure, or somebody who could cough up a game, even at what will probably be a lost season for this team. I think they'd rather go with a guy like Beno, especially if there's already a wink-wink sort of agreement, you know, for him to join the team. I mean, even if they're just going to pay him and then waive him, that seems a little unlikely, because then that brings a little bit more fuel to the fire that Brian Windhorst lit when they first waived him, when they first waived Udrih last season. And I don't think Miami is that kind of to bring on that kind of scrutiny. So to me, I think they'd rather just keep him on there where he can continue to work alongside Goran Dragic and others, you know, a little bit, provide a little bit more veteran experience, especially considering how young this team is going to be. You know, I think he's a good fit in that sense. And I think they'd rather keep a guy like him over a guy like Magruder or anybody else. Even Briante Weber, I think they'd rather kind of stash him, get him a little bit more experience, and then eventually see if he's able to translate that into the big league.
I'm a big Briante Weber fan. I was very impressed with what I saw during Summer League in Orlando. I think you were too, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I love – he's just a very intense defender. He just gets up in your grill. He's like one of those Patrick Beverly, just annoying as hell kind of guys, and that has a lot of value in the NBA. I do think he's a little ways away from being a solid contributor, though. I think he plays a little too fast for his own good. His decision-making is questionable at times. And
absolutely.
He doesn't have a great jump shot. And I think that those things combined can limit playing time and can lead to a very short leash by Eric Spoelstra. So I think having a guy like Beno would be better for the Heat if they're looking to put the best roster together. But now we're talking about maybe a similar argument to the Wayne Ellington or Magruder argument, which is the Weber and Beno argument, is, okay, well, you know what Beno is. If it's the third point guard on your team, if your core set of guards is Goran Dragic, Tyler Johnson, Josh Richardson, and Deion Waiters, and even Justice Winslow, who can handle the ball a little bit, if those are your ball handlers, that's your core group, does it really matter who your third guy is? Do you want to keep a guy in-house, like Weber, who you can develop under your own coaching staff, or do you want Beno, who can come in and play valuable minutes and even start for you, you know, if there be an injury or something like that, where I don't think Weber could do that. And it's a question that he would have to ask. So it'll be interesting. Can Beno beat out somebody and make this roster? I think that's very much in play.
Yeah, I'd say it almost virtually guaranteed, given the culture and the systemic way in which they've done that in the past. And you know, we all tend to think of the D-League as a demotion, and maybe in some sense it is, you know, especially a financial one. But, you know, you've written about in the past the kind of seamless transition guys are able to make once they play some extensive minutes in Sioux Falls, and then are able to just kind of adjust much more quickly than we'd expect them to once they get promoted to the big game. You know, and I think, you know, the Heat have done a really, really admirable job of trying to create a culture in Sioux Falls similar to what they have in Miami. And I know that we've talked about that being somewhat overblown as far as the Miami Heat culture, but at least from an X's and O's standpoint, a way that guys are coached and stuff like that, so that when they come up to Miami, if they wind up coming to Miami, there won't be as much of a transition period. It'll be a short one, if anything. And so we've seen that from Josh Richardson. We saw that from Hassan Whiteside, who was able to make an immediate impact. Tyler Johnson, you know, all these guys played extensive minutes in Sioux Falls, came to Miami, and were able to make an impact here. So I think that's it speaks volumes of the way that they use that as a true minor league to help, you know, shore up their roster in case of an injury or a need of any kind.
And I would like to at least point out that we keep talking about these guys beating out each other and things like that in the framework of you basically have a cap on how many guards that you can carry, and you know, there's a 15-man roster, so to an extent you do. But, I mean, it's possible that the Heat could opt to keep Magruder or Weber if they or Ellington or Benno or one of these guys that are on the fringe if they really keep one extra one. If they're able to trade Josh McRoberts, right? If they feel like they really want to keep one of these guys under the Heat, the American Airlines ceiling, right? Like they want to keep one of these guys in-house so that they can coach him up in person.
Yeah.
Then maybe they're able to, I know, like, trading Josh McRoberts has been a nightmare, but yeah. Hypothetically, if they can swing it, that might be something that is a possibility down the road where they say, okay, let's trade Josh McRoberts. We keep Magruder, who we've been really happy with, or we keep Weber, who we've been really happy with. We keep him in-house. We bolster our depth at guard, and we move on from there. But it's, you know, just a thing I wanted to throw out there. All right, I think that's all the questions that we have. Thank you to everybody that sent us mailbag questions. We try to get to as many as possible. Thank you, Tony Carruthers. Thank you, Aherds. Thank you, Patrick Phillip. And thank you to the several people that did email us about the shooting guards. We appreciate the questions. LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. If you want to start sending us questions for next week, we'll be more than happy to start receiving them. And thank you for listening. This has been Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the ever-growing Locked On Podcast Network. There's an NFL division. The NBA is almost completely filled out with teams. So if you're one of these guys that like to listen to other teams and check out what's going on with the NFL side, I mean, lots of exciting things happening at the Locked On Podcast Network. Locked On Heat is available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Audio Boom. I think that's all of them. And we'll be back in a few days. So thank you for listening. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.
It's the cold world, baby, but I'm a cold nigga. Frostbite trying to take a chew of how I slither. My presence give them chills like an Antarctic winter. And I'm banging Inglewood till I'm getting caught with a splinter. I'm having all this for dinner. So many fall apart when I spark. It's hard to remember. It's always hard remembering. Pain is part of the riddle. Somewhere between my art and the dark, I'm parked in the middle. I knew my process was little. I knew my heart was official. I knew that in my heart that that boy was part of a bigger
place. Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.